Great. Welcome, everybody, Borodar. My name is Oriel Miller, and I am the Director of the Institute of Welsh Affairs, the IWA. For those of you who don't know us yet, we are Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change through policy research and advocacy, through our online and print publications. Here's the latest edition of our magazine, The Welsh Agenda, and the next one is out later this month. And we provide platforms for comment, robust comment and debate, and agenda setting events like today's. We're a membership organisation with over 1,000 members across the country and far further afield. We're funded by us and foundations. This is the third in our Rethinking Wales panel discussions, and we're running them every Thursday at 11 o'clock in the morning. Next week, we're going to be focusing on the gendered impact of the crisis. For those of you who haven't joined us before, we started this series of discussions to shine a light on what matters most to people now in this, our new reality, and to start to look further ahead than the immediate crisis. We're deliberately bringing people together across policy boundaries. Before we get started, I'd like to talk a little bit about the changes that are all around us. If we accept that these changes can be broken down into novel changes, things that have happened now for the first time because of COVID-19, changes that are evolutionary, things that are changing still but aren't where we want them to be just yet, and visionary changes, how we want the future to look but which aren't yet achievable, what do these look like for you when it comes to the economy? Is there a shared vision about this? Who doesn't want a brave new Wales? Do we all want to leap to the future, or do many people still want to retreat to the past? Today, we're focusing on the future economy of Wales. In our first Rethinking Wales session, we heard Professor Laura McAllister talk about the moments that create a shift in what the public believes is politically possible. Ideas that once seemed impossible, undesirable, or both suddenly become common sense. Even before COVID-19, plenty of policymakers and commentators in Wales were talking about the need for a new economic model, one with far greater emphasis on well-being and sustainability, and one which values those jobs that really matter. COVID has now given us a word for those roles, key workers. It's also shown us which parts of the economy we really can't do without in a crisis, and which bits of it we value, but maybe don't put our money where our mouths are to support, either as individuals or as a society. Small local shops, restaurants, cultural venues, even pubs. In Wales, we have taken steps towards defining what a better economy looks like and towards measuring it. But we still need clarity on what levers we can and should pull to make it a reality, particularly in a devolved nation with a long history, but a young democracy still growing into its powers and indeed into our new parliament. Should we be talking about tax, universal basic income, public procurement, planning, infrastructure, ownership models, support for business, support for workers, a new approach to education and lifelong learning? How will COVID affect all of those things? The Office of Budget Responsibility has predicted a UK-wide drop in GDP of 13% for the year as a whole compared to last year's average. What this means in real terms is a fall of £300 million in income tax receipts for Wales, as Professor Jerry Holtham on our panel today set out in his recent article for the Welsh Agenda. That also assumes some form of economic recovery begins in July. Whatever our views on GDP as a metric, that financial hit will be very real, so our plans must factor it in. Our next economy minister's main task will be navigating a recession. Of course, the shift to a more successful, cleaner, greener, fairer economy won't just come top down from politicians and policymakers. The economy emerges from choices large and small that each and every one of us makes every day. We can't simply install a new economic model on the hardware of society and switch it off and switch it on again. But we can all be intensely local in our individual economic choices. They are our choices, after all. We at the IWA think there is an appetite for radical change, but for change to be meaningful, it has to start making a difference to people's lives in the here and now, and it cannot leave anyone behind. And for change to be successful, it needs to happen in practical steps, starting from where we are, not from where we wish we already were. and for change to stick and to be sustainable, it will need to happen in partnership with communities based on their needs and with their consent. Whilst communities are best placed to understand their own needs and challenges, they may need evidence and data to better understand their places, assets and potential. We hope that the tool that we've built with others, Understanding Welsh Places, can help with this. But they may need policymakers in Cardiff Bay or Westminster to remove barriers and enable them to step up and shape the future economy of their place. I hope that today's session will begin to show us what practical steps Wales can take now towards realising an economy that works better for us all. We're going to hear from our panellists in a moment, but we also want to hear from you in our chat room and on Twitter using the hashtag Rethinking Wales. What are we going to do with all of this? We plan to use these sessions as a starting point to develop long-term policy ideas for post-COVID-19 Wales. Keep watching this space to hear about that work as it develops. Delighted that we've got so many people joining us again this morning. We'll just do a little bit of housekeeping first. Participants are muted by the host. We're going to use the sidebar chat for questions. Please use the drop-down panel to send the moderator a question by selecting to moderator. Please remember that all chat questions are recorded. We're going to be keeping strictly to an hour, but keeping the chat room open after midday so that you can continue to connect with each other. I've made the joke about toilets and fire exits before, but I hope you all know where they are. We're going to ask the panelists a couple of questions. In the current climate, in terms of COVID-19, what does Wales need to be thinking about for the long term? And what are the immediate problems that Wales faces as a result of the pandemic? But also, what might be possible now that previously wasn't? On our panel today, we've got Debbie Green, who's Group Chief Executive for the Coastal Housing Group. We've got Professor Gerald Holtham, Hodge Professor of Regional Economy at Cardiff Metropolitan University and a member of the IWA board. We've got Jess McQuaid, who's the Head of Policy and Advocacy at WWF Cymru. And we have Ewan Thomas, who's Chief Executive Officer of Planned in Pembrokeshire. Welcome to you all, and thank you very much indeed for joining us. Debbie, I'm going to come to you first, please.
Thank you very much, Oriel. To start in terms of the immediate problems, and I think for me the immediate is almost what does that mean, and does that break down into two phases? It feels like we're in an optimistic space where we're hoping lockdown finishes quite soon and everything reverts to a normal or a new normal. I think more realistically we're looking at a period of uncertainty. So for me there's the problems we've got now and problems we've got while we're navigating uncertainty, but how we use that time to reset the vision going forwards. And I guess part of the uncertainty is we know what's happened to the economy now, but the uncertainty is around how does it recover, and are we looking at some sort of V or U or W or some other letter of the alphabet in terms of how we model that. Wales, I think, didn't come into this crisis in a strong position. We've not recovered particularly well from deindustrialisation, and we're still struggling with the pernicious problems of inequality, child poverty, and post-austerity, huge increases in the use of food banks. A lot of the jobs that have been created in Wales have been poor quality jobs in the gig economy that have been very vulnerable to the coronavirus crisis, but also may well be vulnerable in terms of how do they come back in the context of social distancing in the short term. And some of the things that Wales has relied on in terms of hospitality, tourism, etc., obviously all at risk, both now and in the immediate future. For Welsh Government, in conversations recently with Welsh Government, it's clear that basically the coffers are pretty much empty. Spare money that was in Welsh Government has been used up on their economic resilience measures, so the extra gaps that they plugged in addition to the UK government support and things like support for business rates and some other measures as well. And they're now in the position of thinking about how do they actually reprioritise their own budget for the rest of this government term, particularly also bearing in mind kind of regional and spatial considerations in that, but I think struggling a bit to think about how they use that to support particular sectors or actually identifying which are the sectors that need support and which might they need to leave go under. And clearly, in terms of what money there is, most of it will actually need to be there to support health, or to bail out the local authorities that are also running out of money, or if not having run out of it already. So I think there's a huge problem in terms of how do you plan over a horizon of uncertainty where you don't even know how long that horizon is. People are talking about more than one wave of the pandemic, which will clearly mean that businesses aren't keen to open if they know they're simply going to have to shut, or lockdown will be reversed again. And with some of the sort of leaked information about Welsh Government, what the lockdown phases might look like, I think in the short term, actually not that much will change, and it's quite a prolonged period which might reverse at any time. So I think business confidence is a real issue, and what will happen to hibernating businesses who are maybe managing to be preserved now because their staff are on furlough, but actually how long can that continue? How long will support for furloughed staff continue? That's going to be phased out as well. And looking at things like sort of starting to talk about a COVID-19 generation of people who are emerging from school and colleges now and are really going to struggle in the short and maybe longer term to find employment. Business support, I think, is looking different in the short term. So very much not in the space of grants and loans anymore, but potentially more looking at investment model. And I guess one of the plus points is that banks and the capital markets are still working, which is different from after the financial crash. And I think also problems around the relationship with Westminster and how does kind of a devolved government handle a crisis of this size, where actually Westminster is very much steering and the relationships between Treasury and Welsh Government are difficult. And we're also in the run-up to an election, which means that Welsh Government thinking is quite short term. So when they're even looking at economic interventions, they're looking at things that they can do quickly so that the electorate are able to see what they are prior to the next election, which is maybe not the most helpful right now. In terms of the longer term, I think, you know, we've got to be realistic in Wales about what we can and can't do, but what we absolutely can do is set a vision. So it's about brave leadership, reorganising around shared values and principles to guide decisions. I think Scotland's a bit ahead of us there. They're already talking about rebuilding Scotland's economy based on principles of overcoming inequality, delivering wellbeing, and working with communities to build cohesion and support. I'd like to see something along those lines come out of Welsh Government now. So there's something about how do we set a new paradigm and how do we measure that? And this conversation has already started, but it's clearly moving away from some of the conventional measures of GDP into what do we really mean by livability? How are we reducing inequality and child poverty, and how do we measure and increase well-being? And recognising that those are just not nice to haves, but actually there's a real cost to inequality, that in countries where inequality is high also do less well. So policies need to speak to both of those things, and there's clearly an opportunity here in hanging on to the values that people have recognized or re-recognized during lockdown. I think it is a relatively short window to try and refreeze some of the things that have been unfrozen as we've all stayed at time and re-evaluated our values. And there is something about we do have the mechanism or the law here already. We've got the Wellbeing and Future Generations Act, but it feels so far it's very much been in a space of sort of bureaucracy and compliance, rather than mainstreaming it as the kind of top line that guides everything that we do. There's clearly an opportunity to refocus on what we're starting in the foundation economy, to talk about foundational renewal. So some of that is clearly recognising those key industries and key workers that are important to us and paying them properly. And if they're paid properly, they'll be able to reinvest that money into their communities. There's a huge piece about a commitment to decarbonisation and the green agenda, and where are the opportunities there around getting new build right, that huge potential capital investment in retrofit, community energy, potential for Wales to be the lead in green recycling. Also, how do you use innovation to do old things in new ways, which is how we kind of lever in the benefits of AI innovation, creative industries, health tech, those sort of things, and also thinking about connectivity and more digitalization in retail, and potential for manufacturing innovation as well. So some of the automation, shortening supply chains and reshoring that we need to do. I think modular build is also an opportunity in terms of construction and thinking about how to do construction in terms of social distancing. And then a list of things that I'll whiz through quickly. So kind of the active travel, placemaking, really important to focus on value-based procurement. And I think there's a big piece about skills and redeployment in terms of where the opportunities are actually going to be in the sectors that will continue and survive. Very quickly, there's something about also recognising the challenges in really key areas like health and social care, and grasping that so that becomes an attractive area in which to work with proper rewards, and recognising there'll be really challenges as well around the construction industry and what do we do about tourism in Wales, and again about kind of the venues that we all rely on as well as part of that. I think business support needs to be done differently. So the role of Business Wales and Development Bank of Wales, I think they need to be much more agile, prepared to make kind of smaller investments, but able to innovate and take more risk. And I do think there's an argument about, do we need some sort of resurgence or reinvention of the WDA, which I suspect is not going to happen, but it feels like we need to be able to devolve that risk taking out of central
Okay, I'm going to draw that to a close, Debbie, unless you've got a final point you need to make and move us on.
No, that's fine.
Great, thank you very much indeed, Debbie. Jerry, there's a massive morass of stuff there, isn't there? Where do you start? How do you see things?
Well, in the short term, the main issue will just be dealing with a quite an extreme economic crisis. And frankly, our fate will be determined in London rather than in Cardiff, because the Welsh government can't print money. It has very restricted powers to borrow money. And its tax base, such as it is getting a hammering. They've had to give up on business rates as part of the relief effort for businesses, and their income tax, their share of income tax will take a battering as well. So really, yeah, we can whistle, but the fact is we're really in the hands of what the British government decides to do. The Welsh government's powers of action are quite restricted in the short run, faced with a crisis of this size. There's a risk that Wales will be hit harder than the rest of the UK, so the British government action may not be sufficient. Can't say that for sure, but it's quite likely, because we have such a large number of small companies in Wales. We're a small company economy. We have branch offices of international companies, but large Welsh companies, you can count them on the fingers of one hand. In fact, Django Reinhardt could count them on the fingers of one hand. So it's, he only had three fingers. So there is a risk that these companies won't have the financial resources to survive in many sectors. So there we are. It's a grim situation, and of course we've got Brexit coming along as well, which won't help. I think a key issue will be how business can adapt to the situation, because it's clear that one of the elements that's likely to happen now is a certain dilution of globalization. So these very long, complex supply chains may well be truncated in future. So all these small Welsh companies involved in the automotive industry, for example, supplying bits and pieces to engines or things that get then passed back and forth across the channel, that's at risk, I think. Was at risk anyway with Brexit, but it's certainly at risk now. But there may be opportunities because of that sort of reshoring effort. We've all seen that the British economy wasn't able to reduce lots of fairly ordinary things that that were needed in the current crisis. And if the matter of public procurement now, governments start to look for local suppliers of things like, I don't know, ventilators or whatever, there may be opportunities for people in the medical appliance business and things like that to find new things to do. So the question will be how adaptable Welsh business can be in the short term. But I think it is going to be difficult, and our fate is not entirely in our own hands. I can say more about that, but I won't now. In the longer run, I think Wales faces three issues. One is dependency. I've just spoken about it. Our fate isn't in our own hands, and until we can grow our economy and strengthen our tax base, it won't be. The second is climate change, which is going to hit us like everybody else. We can only do our little part in our corner of the world, and how things go will depend on an international response. And the third thing is the demographic crisis. We currently have nearly a quarter of the population over 65, and on central projections, that will go to nearly a third by 2040. There's no case in history of an economy developing rapidly, however you want to describe development, whatever you want to do with your resources. It's very difficult to expand and develop in the face of an increasing demographic change like that in the direction of more dependency. And so I think policy in Wales has to be angled very strongly to supporting young people, to encouraging young people to stay in Wales, to encouraging other young people to come into Wales, and quite brutally, frankly, discouraging people from retiring to Wales because, they pay their taxes in England and then they get their social care in Wales. So I think I speak as an old timer myself, but I mean, it's time we bit the bullet, I think, and policy was directed much more to helping young people because the future of the country will depend on it. We will not be able to reduce our dependency with that kind of demographic shift unless we make a very determined effort, to do so.
Jerry, thank you. Jess, we're coming to you next. Climate change isn't going to go away, and it's there. And whatever we do next in terms of building back better needs to take that into consideration, into primary consideration. Could you tell us what you think the key issues are both now and for the future, please?
Yes, thank you. I wanted to highlight, firstly, how environmental organisations and the contribution that they make to our economy and wellbeing has been affected by COVID. As this is often a forgotten part of our economy in Wales, which reflects the kind of the wide challenge that we have with our current economic models, that nature's value and the services that provides is often not taken into account. And hence, we're now moving into a space where we're seeing some of the impact of that and the disservice that nature is having on our wellbeing, which is kind of more and more evidence around how the pandemic is linked to that. I mean, and then that's kind of in the opposite sense of what's happening now when people are experiencing COVID crisis. Many of us are actually finding solace in nature via access to our local park, morning bird songs. But also it's highlighted how there's massive inequalities in access to nature. So people who are deprived urban areas have little access to green space. Understanding that kind of context of where we are now, environmental organisations kind of are a critical partner to delivering nature restoration and decarbonisation agenda. Yet a recent survey by Wales Environment Link have included some of the challenges that kind of we're facing, impact on our frontline functions, including conservation and land management, closure of visitor centres, cafes, shops, and tourist attractions. And a lot of the projects and community work and the volunteer work that goes directly into nature restoration has had to be stopped. Our significant contribution to our scientific and policy work in Wales is kind of reduced due to many staff being furloughed. And 98% of the respondents have had experienced immediate effect, with 27% at high risk within the next 3 or 4 months. And that's probably going to face be even stronger next year when we'll see a drop in fundraising and our legacies will be affected. So I think these economic losses associated with coronavirus in the coming years are expected to be in the order of hundreds of millions of pounds for environmental charities in Wales. We're importing employers and we have a combined turnover of 47 million. I mean, that's kind of sounds fairly small in the wider context, but of course there's all those kind of additional kind of services that we provide to people's wellbeing. So I think the challenge is going to be how we support those organisations, but also the other key issue that we're facing in Wales, or that COVID has kind of highlighted that I wanted to raise, was also about the challenges in our food system in Wales. So food and drink is a priority sector in Wales and is growing, yet the COVID crisis has highlighted some serious issues, particularly around its resilience and vulnerabilities to shock. So some in the food sector are doing well in the crisis. We're seeing more support for local shops. Local food producers are talking about a massive increase through kind of food box schemes. And there's increase in grocery sales considerably on this time last year. But many others are struggling. So farmers unions are asking for urgent support from government. Many farms are on the brink of collapse. There's massive volatility in dairy and red meat prices. And wages for many in this sector are low, so kind of really vulnerable in the sector. And access to food is a massive worry for many people in Wales, particularly because of poverty. And a lot of the causes of this have been pre-COVID, but COVID has highlighted the vulnerability of our food system. Particularly, I mean, as Jerry mentioned, we're part of kind of a globalised supply chain, just in time, very few localised supply chains in Wales. And we've got inefficient and unsustainable production, inequalities in affordability and access and distribution, and high levels of food loss and waste among the problems in our system. So I think what we've seen in Wales and globally is that our economy and our economic system and model doesn't function well to shocks. This is a health shock at this time. We had a financial one in 2008. And as you know, Jerry and others have mentioned, we'll expect many more environmental shocks on our way with climate and also the nature crisis that kind of sits with us. I think we saw with the recent floods in South Wales, that was just a taster of kind of some of what's to come. And I think many, not including environmentalists, don't think that our current economic model is fit for purpose for our human environmental well-being. And arguably, it's had a significant contribution to the root cause of the pandemic they're actually experiencing now. So in terms of what we need to be thinking about the long term, many people, such as the UN Secretary General, are already saying we need to recover better, that we need an economy and society that we rebuild after the crisis, which is much more resilient, more environmentally sustainable and more socially just. The UK Climate Change Committee letter to the head of four nations and talked about the same, with a list of what this looks like and where investment's needed. WWF Cymru, and part of kind of a growing movement of others in Wales, are hoping that this crisis is a moment that galvanises all the work to date in trying to move us towards sustainability, including the introduction of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, enables a co-creation of a wellbeing economy for Wales. So there's different ways that can be described. That's just one, but in essence, kind of one planet economics, environmental growth, the donut model. But in essence, as has been mentioned, it's about delivering more than just GDP. It's also about building in environmental and human wellbeing indicators into this. Now, that's not new. It's been around for decades. New Economics Foundation have been pushing it, as has many others. But I think now is the time, really, that we need to look. I mean, some of the challenges that Jerry's just outlined are kind of serious. But, you know, looking at what we want to measure as a society in Wales, the living standards, our health, environment, and the types of sectors that we need to be investing in if we do have some sort of fiscal stimulus package that is devolved to Wales, which is what we're actually going to be lobbying for kind of through our UK colleagues. It's not just through decarbonisation to tackle climate change, but it's also key to recognise that nature restoration plays a really important part in that. IPPRs in a useful assessment of the jobs and the timelines, job like ready to go jobs. And those include things like nature restoration, tree planting, peat bog restoration, Natura 2000 sites, seagrass planting, as well as the kind of the more traditional understanding of jobs in decarbonising sectors like energy efficient installation, community renewables. And we also need to be looking at where we want to have certain expectations on the jobs which aren't necessarily green, and how we green those brown jobs, so supporting or encouraging or even forcing industries in Wales which are going to have investment from Welsh Government to require levels of environmental improvement. So we've seen in France the state funding to the airline, it's part of that is a condition that they don't actually offer flights where train travel can be done. So I think we've started to see some of this approach in Welsh Government through the economic contracts approach, which does have decarbonisation within it. But obviously that can be expanded out to other environmental impacts. So I think we are kind of have confidence that this is the direction of travel with Welsh Government, with the prosperous, more equal, greener Wales. But the challenge always in Wales is moving from principle into practice. And that, you know, the implementation gap in Wales, the challenge we've got now that Gerry's just outlined is extreme. So kind of as well as selling the vision and in kind of co-creating that with the people of Wales, how we work together on a kind of an achievable action plan or a route map is going to be critical, and probably need to do that rapidly. Because we're going to be pressing up against business as usual on steroids. And I kind of really don't want that to happen, and many others in Wales don't. So I think my kind of ending point would be that kind of during this economic reset, we want to ensure that we work together towards the path of a green recovery that embeds new ways of working, new greener economic patterns, and more equitable access to a high quality environment. And that's part of the broader economic and social recovery for us to Wales. It drives us towards the zero carbon Wales that we need, and also one where biodiversity loss is halted. To ensure that we have their well-being for the future generations.
No lack of ambition, Jess, from you. Thank you very much indeed. Ewan, I'm going to come to you now. I think particularly useful, bearing in mind, a recent stat that low earners are seven times as likely as high earners to work in a sector which is currently shut down, and obviously hospitality being one of those sectors, and that being a key driver of the economy in Pembrokeshire. Can you pick up on some of the points that the others have raised, perhaps, and tell us how you think there is a way out of this?
Yeah. Borada, good morning, everyone. And again, thanks to Oriel and the IWA for putting this morning on. It's been really interesting to hear my colleagues in terms of the panelists and what they've highlighted. I think there is a consensus in terms of, you know, we can't go back to the business as usual approach that we saw pre-lockdown. I think what we need to look at is the positives that have come out of lockdown. And I think there are positives which we can learn from and hopefully implement and sustain going forward. And certainly from the perspective of an organisation such as Planet, alongside other community-based organisations across Wales and the UK, what we have seen is a rise in community cohesion, a different way of doing things. Things didn't suddenly fall apart because, you know, large-scale employers suddenly had to shut down and staff were furloughed and things were mothballed. What we've seen is a rise in how communities can work together, that local supply chains can prove effective, and we can support local businesses in a different way and support our fellow residents within those communities to provide a sustainable, alternate, different way to providing local economic kind of strengths in some respects. I think what will be useful is in terms of having that knowledge, I mean, Gerry's referred to it in terms of the Westminster model. They are going to be so preoccupied with post-coronavirus, have Brexit into the trade agreement to go through and understand. So that is going to preoccupy their time for, you know, years to come. So Wales is going to be on the back foot. Now, Welsh Government, despite all best efforts, will not have the financial clout or resources to actually do what we need and require for our communities and our business sector across Wales. So I think what we need to do is to look inward, and we've actually got some fantastic models across communities in Wales already in terms of how they're working together, through business, through the supply chains, and through local skills to actually deliver a model which I think we need to look at. And I think what Welsh Government, I would suggest from a community angle, and certainly, you know, we talk to communities and local businesses every day. What we need is just a confidence. Rather than kind of look at the glass half empty and say we're not having any extra funding from Westminster, there's no money left in Cardiff Bay. Well, we've got fantastic resources in Wales. We've got knowledge, we've got skills, we've got people, we've got physical resources, we've got great entrepreneurs. And I think what we need to do is in Wales, effectively push the reset button. Jess referred to how we can look at environmental kind of issues to support the economy going forward. We need to be smarter in terms of how we use existing community initiatives. In Pembrokeshire, we've got fantastic initiatives in communities such as Solver. If you go to North Wales and you look at what's happening with Blaenau Ffestiniog and Cwmni Bro Ffestiniog there, you look at some of the other towns across Wales and how they've regenerated themselves through their own particular efforts. I'm thinking of Cowbridge, I'm thinking of Narberth, Llandeilo. All of these towns have kind of looked at what is important to them locally. They've looked at local supply chains. They've looked at local skills. And I think what we can perhaps do is learn from those. Now, with all due respect to academics, I think what we've seen in the past is Welsh Government relying too much on academia to drive us out of wherever we are. You know, it could have been the recession. It could be looking at education, transformation. What we need to do, I think, is work with academia still, but not rely on academia to actually give us solutions. We've got solutions in Wales across all our communities. So let's look at, I'd love to see reports coming out of Welsh Government that, you know, it's the Solver report, it's the Cowbridge initiative, it's the Ffestiniog, you know, kind of approach. These are things which are actually happening in Wales. And what I would like to see is that Welsh Government now, post-COVID-19, look to communities to actually drive change. Procurement shouldn't be about the lowest unit cost price that we can get from elsewhere. It should be, well, how can we support other businesses within a certain mile radius of that organisation? And that should apply to health boards, local councils, you know, large and small organisations, about working within, as we've heard, the foundation economy, but also the circular economy. Now, Lee Waters, as Deputy Minister, as we know, has been a really big advocate of this, as have many others. And I think it's time to stop talking about it and let's actually put something into practice which actually delivers on it. So I'd love to see local procurement actually come into fruition. I also think skills is something which, you know, my fellow panellists have also picked up on. I was fortunate to work myself for 5 years across North Wales as the leading kind of skills officer there, to work with HEFE and businesses. And I think if we can continue to promote entrepreneurship in our schools and also upskill our existing workforce in Wales, we will be able to then kind of look inward to retain a lot of skills to make sure that we navigate our way through whatever comes next. The Bank of England this morning, rather gloomy predictions. However, they have kind of added the caveat that next year there could be a bounce back. What we've got to make sure is that we don't bounce back to how it used to be, we bounce back looking forward and how we want it to be. And I think communities are at the forefront of how we can do that. And the rural economy particularly often gets overlooked. The rural economy is just as innovative, just as digitally savvy, and is just as forward-looking. So I think our agricultural sector, our tourism sector, our hospitality sector should have as much of an equal footing as our glamorous counterparts in aviation, manufacturing and elsewhere. So I think let's look at what we've got in Wales, look at the resources we have, look at what communities are doing and use communities to take us forward in terms of a new reset of the Welsh economy.
Thanks very much indeed, Ewan. So plenty in those four presentations for us to pick up on. We've had loads of questions coming through from everybody in online. I'm going to go start with something that Susie Ventress Field from the Welsh Centre for International Affairs has asked about. Being intensely local can correlate with being globally responsible, but how do we make sure that our recovery during our recovery, we also have a positive impact on the rest of the world, or at least take a do no harm approach. Debbie, you know, you were making a point there about anchor institutions and their role in the local economy, and you sit on the Ministerial Advisory Group for the Foundational Economy. Can you talk to us about some of the thinking that's coming out of that group, and what are the likely lines of action?
Yes, it's quite difficult at the moment, Auriel, I think, because the foundational economy piece is a long-term resetting. Yeah. Since coronavirus has accelerated people's willingness to listen to the agenda, but we're being driven into quite a tight political time frame. So what the actual task and finish group is working on at the moment is some kind of short-term things we can do quite quickly, which isn't really the space that we'd like to be in. So we're trying to work on two frames, really. One is respond to that request, but the other one is to set some principles within those requests that will carry on beyond. I mean, I think it's fair to say that most of our thinking has been quite focused within Wales rather than looking outside the borders. I guess that, and I guess that's one of the things that we will need to start reframing actually. And the next part of foundational economy thinking, which is new, and really still a work in progress, is kind of foundational economy 2.0, which we're calling it, which is more about thinking about foundational economy in terms of green economy. And that really will take our thinking, I think, more into a global context. But I don't think there's anything really more specific to say on that.
No, that's fine. Thank you. Jerry, you know, a good point from Fiannan that we can't do anything without investment. And you talked about what Welsh Government can and cannot do in terms of borrowing powers. I know that there's some exploration by the Minister that was announced yesterday in terms of flexing those borrowing powers. But how are we going to get the investment that we need to do what needs to be done?
I think Ewan makes some good points about the need for, you know, bottom-up sort of local initiatives. I think that's true. Essentially, to get investment, there has to be something people will invest in.
Indeed.
And I think we've got to use the the resources of skills that we've got to try and attract people. I think we have to make a bet on the green economy. We've got to take the view that however much it's all talk at the moment, in the end, the crisis will force people to decarbonize in a dramatic way. And people who have developed techniques for doing so, whether they're small scale or large scale, will have something to sell to the rest of the world. So I think that is an area where we just have to make a big bet. We've got a lot of small initiatives for power generation, but we don't have a smart grid to take full advantage of them. Work to develop that and to techniques would be very valuable. We've got a lot of work done on house building that can construct houses that are not only carbon neutral, but generate power themselves. We've got a building industry which is extremely conservative and more or less living in the same way they've lived since the 19th century, and we've somehow got to develop off-site construction techniques so that we can cheaply build or reasonably pricedly build that kind of house. And if we can do that, those are techniques we can then export. Because the thing about the foundational economy is it's essential. But on its own, it's genteel poverty.
It's not enough.
You're not going to be prosperous unless you can flog stuff to the rest of the world. And I think we have to make our bets on what we think we can do. And I would go nap on decarbonization.
Okay, so Jess, can I come to you on that? And then I'm going to ask you, each of you, to be devil's advocate about which bits of the economy should not be propped up in future. So give you a bit of time to think about that. You know, in the face of COVID initiated change, a question from Alec Dauncey coming up. Jess, meantime.
Yeah, Welcome what's been said just from Jerry, and just to re-emphasize, it's not just about decarbonisation, it's also about nature restoration. We're experiencing a huge collapse of our ecosystems and biodiversity in Wales and globally, and that is essentially the services that are part of our economy and provide and kind of make our economy exist. So we have to invest in nature's restoration, not just decarbonisation. In response to how we can be globally responsible from Susie, as Jerry's mentioned, we can't just rely on, as important as it is, on our kind of our localised supply chain and improving that in Wales, whether it's through foundation economy or other methods. And we will still have to be part of that global supply chain, but it's looking at where we can grow our own food instead of getting it globally. But also where we can't, the food that we are getting, for example, globally, that has less damage on nature. So, for example, soy, palm, we need to be looking at kind of deforestation-free supply chains coming into Wales. And a method for trying to make that happen is, again, through our economic contract and then also our procurement, also looking at fair trade, etc. So I just wanted to answer that in response to Susie's question as well. We've been working closely on the foundation economy to try and embed a work with that 2.0 to look at where the opportunities for nature restoration and decarbonisation within the foundation economy, so food, energy production, tree planting, etc., are core sectors within the foundation economy that can be see further investment, which will shift us into a more sustainable kind of economy and greener approach in Wales.
Thanks, Jess. And in terms of things that we should not be investing in the future, can you be devil's advocate, Ewan, and kick us off?
Thanks for being first on that, Oriel. It's a difficult, kind of thing to really call, because every sector, you know, there are employees, there are households, there are families who rely on that. There are
indeed.
However, I think, you know, if we were to play devil's advocate, certainly something I think we perhaps should look at, as in not perhaps propping up, is the airline industry. What we have to do is look at what we've been able to benefit from as a result of the lockdown. And what we've seen is a return to local supply chains. We've seen a return to local producers, which, going back to Jess's point around, you know, the carbon footprint, do we really need to kind of import kind of strawberries in the middle of December from halfway around the world? It may give us a chance to reset the button to support our rural economy, again, going back to that, and go back to seasonality for our food and produce, which, you know, we were very happy to adhere to, you know, kind of only a couple of decades ago. But now we expect, through the use of aviation, to have goods and services transported in at all times of the year. And I think that's something perhaps which we could not prop up, and then invest the money in our own infrastructure, in our own transport within Wales and within the UK as well. Looking at public transport, you know, the rail network. I mean, hopefully people will gain confidence to go back to that. Our local public transport, our buses. We're already hearing of, you know, investment of some of the larger metropolitan unitary authorities in the UK investing in cycle lanes now as a result of the lockdown. So I think if we were looking at something which we had to not prop up as devil's advocate, I would say it's aviation.
Okay, thank you. Debbie, can I come to you on that one, please?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I agree with all of that. I think I'd also go about not propping up anything where there isn't good behaviour. So we want to be much clearer about disincentivising bad behaviour. And it's interesting that the major institutional investors now are quite quickly ramping up lending on much better terms to people who can genuinely demonstrate environmental, social and good governance, as well as financial performance. That seems to be ramping up the agenda very quickly. So I think building on that is, we shouldn't be encouraging anything which doesn't pay tax, which doesn't pay decent wages, which doesn't demonstrate it can meet those environmental and social goals, as well as being financially sustainable.
Thanks. We've got a couple of questions. Your point, Jerry, about enabling, encouraging and enabling young people to to both stay in Wales and come to Wales. Lots of people either come to Wales the first time in search of better quality of life, or return to Wales when they've they're sufficiently financially secure, or able to commute or whatever, or able to start a business from a lovely rural retreat. Or because they can afford house prices here for whatever different reasons. And I speak as a returner as well in my 30s. How do we retain talent in Wales better?
Well, I think one thing we could do is take action on things like fees, you know, university fees, college fees. I'd abolish them. Or at least if I couldn't afford to abolish them, I would have a holiday that said anybody who stays in Wales and works in Wales for 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, after graduation, we forgive their fees entirely. So you know, if people start their career here, they're more likely to continue than if they leave immediately. So I think you know, there's a lot of things that people say, oh, well, the middle class, you know, the ones who go to university, so why should our taxes support them? But I think in this case, I'd say, forget all that. You know, we've got to do things that encourage young people to stay in Wales. I would certainly make education free. Possibly with that kind of a tie in as well. The other thing I would do is look at age relation in taxes. As you know, I published a paper with IWA initially, and the Welsh government then has put it on the website. How do we pay for social care? And my argument is that any tax or levy that we impose to pay for social care should be age related. You pay much more when you're older than you do when you're young.
So if you're coming in later, pay more.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so there's an administrative issue, and the HMRC are going to say they can't possibly do that, but you know, they can really. And I think we need to think about making some taxes anyway, not simply income related, but age related.
Okay. Could we have other people commenting on that one as well? Ewan, retaining young talent in Wales, retaining young talent in Pembrokeshire. It shouldn't always be about, I must go Dick Whittington-esque and seek my fortune elsewhere.
No, absolutely. And Pembrokeshire is one of probably the highest kind of ratios in terms of population, along with some parts of Anglesey and Gwynedd, to see an exodus of young people once they finish their school or college education, to go to the likes of Bristol, London, Liverpool, and so on and so forth. I think what we need is, you know, strong local employers who are willing to invest in upskilling, to, you know, move their current workforce on to create the openings for new talent to come in to those organisations and bring with them fresh ideas. We are seeing it already in a small, you know, kind of scale. Pembrokeshire College, for example, is one of the last FE colleges in Wales which has not merged with anybody else, and we're seeing fantastic results from Pembrokeshire College in terms of how they engage with local employers to be more bespoke and not just take a kind of blanket approach, but to look at what the local needs are. And I think if we can do that more across Wales, where we've got a fantastic infrastructure provided. I mean, Colegau Cymru does a great job in terms of sharing that best practice. But I think every kind of education provider needs to be able to have the freedom to look at their locality, look at what the main economic drivers are bespoke to that locality, and then to work with the businesses and the young people to actually bring a consensus and say, well, what are the benefits of living and working in an area such as Pembrokeshire, Gwynedd, Conwy, Powys, whatever it may be, because they're all very different. But I think it's how we still can show young people that they can remain connected, they can still have the exposure to, you know, fantastic opportunities globally from Wales, but without having to leave their homes, their families, their social networks, and invest back in their communities with the knowledge, with the skills, and also the financial contribution to keep the local services, the local shops, the local businesses very much operational as well.
Thank you. So a key call to much greater involvement and cooperation between businesses, FE colleges in particular. and schools too, in terms of where people are, so knowing what's coming ahead. We did an event a couple of years ago with three colleges in Swansea called, and young people aged, I think, sort of 16, 17, 18, called Should I Go or Should I Stay? And it was fascinating to hear that they weren't aware of what was already in the offing for the redevelopment of Swansea and what was coming down the line. So there was a big information gap there. It was like quite exciting around afterwards what felt different, what felt possible. Debbie, Coastal Housing is a major employer and an anchor institution in many of the communities in which you work in Swansea too. What about how you're seeing a young workforce coming into the organisation, and what do you think you could be doing as an employer there?
I think we're in quite a lucky position because I guess we're seen a little bit like a local authority would have been, as one of those few places you can still go to for a job for life. So I think there's not a huge amount of professional opportunities in sort of, I suppose, more like what would have been a public sector admin type job anymore. Mm-hmm. So we actually do get quite a good pick of graduates who will come in kind of and start working on the front line, who we then tend to support in terms of their personal development and succession plan through the organisation. What we don't get so much is, I guess we're getting sort of graduates from the sort of lower rated universities. I was trying to think of a better way to describe them. I guess what we wouldn't get so much is somebody going to somewhere like Swansea University from outside of Wales and then thinking about staying and working for us. And I think that's both in terms of how housing is perceived as an employer, but also, again, about the point you made about people coming to university and automatically kind of expecting they have to go somewhere else. Just to add to that, though, what I think might be changing, and I'm actually speaking as somebody who grew up in London, went to university in England, and then had my first professional role in Wales, so I've moved the other way. And that was absolutely because it was a lifestyle decision. Grown up in London, commuted on the tube and didn't want to do it anymore. And I've got, my daughter's just finished at Manchester University, and her view was to kind of work in Manchester for a year and then probably go to London. Actually, she's been furloughed from what she was doing in Manchester. She's at home with me at the moment. And she's now looking at London as a place where it's expensive to live. Public transport's not going to work well for quite a long time. You're more likely to catch coronavirus, and really starting to rethink. So I think we've got an opportunity at the moment to communicate something different to graduates who probably are having a bit of a pause, you know, that what they were planning is not going to happen in the short term. And if we have got a different offer in Wales, if we articulate it quickly, if we do give opportunities around writing off grants and loans, and also about reskilling or retraining or being really clear about what the offer might be, I think there's a bit of an opportunity, but it's quite a short window.
Okay, thanks very much. Those are good examples there. Jess, I'm going to come to you with one last question because I'm conscious it's midday. And it's a question from Natasha Davis, which is, ultimately, priorities are shaped by what we measure. That's the crucial thing. So from your perspective, how do we really practically and meaningfully redefine what economic measures should be used to measure success? What measures should be used to measure our success? Because the success isn't only economic.
Thanks for that hard question.
Sorry. Take your time.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the economic model that we've got kind of measures predominantly GDP and kind of none of the other indicators that I think we're seeing more and more people valuing, and kind of we need policymakers to start listening to that. We've got in Wales strong governance system around wellbeing as it exists through the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, which has a series of indicators covering 46 cover everything from kind of environment, social wellbeing, economy, etc. So we've got a very good basis on which to kind of start looking at where additional indicators other than GDP or A can come from. And if we start to look at how we map that over perhaps other models that are emerging, such as the kind of donut economics, which is gaining a lot of traction, There's also something called the Wellbeing Economy Alliance, which is kind of another global movement.
Which Wales has just joined, yeah.
So we've kind of, I think we're in a really strong place in Wales with this governance, sustainability, legal and governance system. So, you know, there's a rapid piece of work that can be done there to look at that. But I think that needs to, you know, that when we actually come up against that in reality, moving away from principle of indicators, hard decisions around where we're actually going to invest money and switching from business as usual, I think that's going to be the real challenge on this. And I just kind of partly in response to the other question about how we keep young people in Wales, you know, the importance of involving people and young people particularly in the Wales that they want. So they have pride in Wales and see hope for their future is really important. And we've seen a mass movement in the last year or so from young people around the concerns around the climate crisis and nature mm-hmm. crisis. Mm-hmm. So if we can kind of try and galvanise some of that enthusiasm and desire to be involved in our policy making for the future, that might set us on kind of a good method by which we can start to kind of create an economy which is right for the people of Wales.
Thanks, Jess. I'm going to come to you, Gerry, for that measurement conundrum, moving from intent to delivery.
I think, well, at the request of the Welsh Government, the Office for National Statistics produces something like 56 indicators of well-being, which are in fact published. So there's no shortage of information. In fact, back in the 90s of the last century, there was quite a lot of work in the States about how you move GDP as a measure nearer to something sensible, which does measure material you know, well-being. Obviously, it's not going to capture cultural or spiritual values or things like that, but just in terms of material well-being, it's not a good measure. And there's quite a lot of work been done on that. So I don't think there's any sort of intellectual challenge here. It's much more a question of political will and something that captures the public imagination. I mean, if people think you're just changing the goalpost because you haven't been scoring many on the old measure, then a new measure won't take off. You know, it has to somehow capture the public's.
So too much choice maybe, and maybe narrowing things down and having a much more clearly communicated set of measurements as a way forward.
Yeah, I think 56 is probably a little bit too many.
A little too many, I think, yeah. And doesn't include any transport one, which we've raised a few times. I'm going to ask you, panelists, please, what you're going to take away from today's conversation and act on, please. The changes that you want to see sticking and what your role is in making that happen. And I'm going to come to go in the orders of speakers. So, Debbie, come to you first, really quickly, please, before I wrap up. Thank you.
Well, some of it, I suppose, I mean, I'm involved with the Ministerial Advisory Board and they're asking for contributions around vision. So for me, I think it's a rebalancing around taking on board the role of the foundation economy, the role of the green economy, but recognising we need to generate wealth, but also that we're ignoring resources in Wales. So I think very much taking on board Ewan's point that actually we discount the resources and skills and stuff we've got in the community. So a more mature way of doing business that takes on board community resource as well.
Thanks. Gerry?
Well, I think the government, one of the things the government can do is to help with a bit of sort of blue skies thinking about which of these changes in supply chains and in reshoring and which are likely to be enduring and therefore just have a talk fest with business about where people might need to go and what changes they might need to make. And then from that should flow the conclusions about how and if the public sector can help in making those adaptations. I think that'll be very important. I also think, you know, it's time to move past the piety and start thinking in a very hard-nosed way about what investments we're going to make in averting climate change. So I think those are the things that need to happen. I think I just need to shut up and keep out of the way as an old timer, really, and let me get on with it.
I won't comment on that, Gerry. Jess, what are you taking away? What's your role?
Yeah, so I think environmental NGOs really have to seize this moment of reset for the economy, but also of people's interest in nature and the environment, and help transition that into action, whether it's in that local community or involvement in the vision of the economy that they want for Wales. And we're working really hard to kind of, as environmental NGOs, to start to express that in a common voice, both as a vision, but also in kind of an action plan that can be deliverable, kind of shovel-ready projects in the short, medium, and long term. Kind of starting to look at research on the green jobs that exist in Wales, but also the potential. And we're doing kind of that in a deep dive way, particularly around the food system and working with health and poverty organisations to look at how we can localise and create a localised institutions to support localisation of the food system in Wales, make it more resilient.
Okay, thanks very much. Ewan?
I think I've really enjoyed listening to my fellow panellists in terms of, I think we've all got a consensus in terms of what we would like to see going forward. I think it's now the practicalities of how we actually implement a lot of this. And certainly what I'll be taking away from today is that, you know, people are growing increasingly respectful of the role of communities and what they can bring to this. I think, you know, there are communities out there who would love to work with the powers that be in Welsh Government to inform them more directly about what actually is happening at the coalface, working with our businesses, working with young people, working with our skilled workforce, to actually make sure that we can sustain and grow that locally, and make sure that Wales has a strong voice going forward, that we are leading the way in terms of looking at environmental issues, but also in terms of digital tech and other innovation across our both rural and urban economy. And certainly what I'll be taking away from today is hopefully that we can work more closely together and actually deliver on this. Talking about it is great and getting that consensus, but what I would love to see is now that communities get around the table with leaders across all different sectors and the political elite as well in Wales to actually effect and deliver change for our economy.
Thank you. And I think that's one of the challenges at the moment, meeting with other sectors and creating a space where that listening can happen in a way which is effective. And in a sort of parallel strand to these Rethinking Wales sessions, we're having precisely those conversations to say, what are the things that are great that we want to keep, and what's the stuff that we want to ditch? Because actually, it's not going to take us into the future. Thank you very much indeed to our panellists for being part of today's conversation. I know there's been loads of chat that's been sparked by the views that we've heard, and we've tried to capture, we will capture all of those questions, and there are questions I didn't get to, so apologies if you put one in. Thank you to Debbie Green, to Jerry Holtham, Jess McQuaid and Ewan Thomas, and to all of you who've stuck with us. I know I've gone over my hour. If you want to receive early notifications of future IWA events and recordings of all of our Rethinking Wales sessions, please do join us as a member at iwa.wales, about us, and support us. Next week, we're going to be looking at the gendered impact of the crisis in all sorts of different ways. As a member, obviously, you get fantastic benefits, but also can play your own part. And that's a crucial theme coming through here, is we've all got a part to play in what comes next. We're an open, politically independent organisation and trying to do our best at a crucial juncture for Wales. Obviously, while you're welcome to go off and make yourself a cup of tea or get lunch, we are leaving our chat function open for another 15 minutes in case you want to capture any thoughts or suggestions you might not have had time to do so during the conversation, or to hook up with somebody that you've met online today and further that discussion. Please be aware that all chat conversations will be available to the IW team as a transcript after the event. Thanks very much indeed for taking part, and hope you can join us for the next discussion next week.